Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
Hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I'm your host this week. My name is Chris Lockhart. And once again, we took a brief hiatus, but we are back, and that is the Deep Space Nine discussion panel. So I've got the regulars here with me this evening. First up, we'll go with Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Hey, pretty good. Hello, everyone.
Next up, we have Richard. How's it going, Richard?
Not bad at all. Good to be back, and better than ever.
Excellent. And last but not least, we have Curtis. How's everything with you, Curtis?
Hello. Just awesome, man.
Perfect. Perfect. Like I said, we've been gone for a couple months with the discussion podcast, some scheduling and whatnot. You know, with it being summer, you know, everyone was busy, but now we're getting into the fall season and we're back. So where we left off was, and I should point out that at the time of this recording, it is October 2020. We are still in the midst of COVID-19. You know, apparently we're in a second wave, which sucks. But with it also being October, it is also Halloween month. Which, even though I am not a horror fan per se, it is pretty cool that I got to meet Candyman, and I think we all have, and that is Mr. Tony Todd, also known as Kern, also known as the older Jake Sisko from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So yeah, when I think of Halloween, for some reason, I think of Tony Todd.
He was awesome to meet in person.
For sure.
Super I gotta nice. Say, out of all the celebrities I've met, and Curtis and I have met quite a few, I would say. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, Tony Todd is top three by far. Like, Avery Brooks, amazing. It was a very short interaction, but mm-hmm. he was amazing. Nana Visitor, and mm-hmm. I'm going to put Tony Todd right up there with the two of them, and it was great.
Nice. Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, I haven't met Avery Brooks, unfortunately, but Tony Todd is probably on my top three for sure. Like, Tony Todd, I think, comes in at number three. Number two would be Patrick Stewart when I got to meet him in 2014. Super nice guy. And then, last but not least, Giancarlo Esposito, who is Gus Fring on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. He's Stan Edgars on The Boys. And he is Moff Gideon.
And the genie of the lamp in Once Upon a Time. Sorry
to yes, interrupt. Yes, yeah. Yeah, that's... Or no, was he the genie in the lamp or was he the mirror?
Yeah. He started out as the genie in the lamp. And... spoiler alert, he was granted the final wish by a king who had everything he needed.
Okay.
And he used it to try and help the evil queen, who was Snow White's nemesis. And he accidentally wished himself into imprisonment in the mirror. So he was, in fact, both.
Interesting, interesting. Yeah, I love that actor, Moff Gideon. He's such a good character. But yeah, like, super nice guy, like, super friendly, very, very charismatic. And I would say Tony Todd was the same, too. Like, you know, I just posted a picture of him and when I got to meet him in Vulcan there on Facebook. Because, like, my wife's a big horror fan, and she was actually watching Candyman yesterday. And because it was on AMC. And I reminded her, I'm like, you know, I've met him, right? She's like, really? So I went and dug out my picture and showed her, and then I put it on social media again because I couldn't find it on my Facebook for some reason. I'm not sure what happened to it, but yeah, super nice guy.
Such a large human being.
Oh yeah, I
the only person I've met who was bigger was Penn Jillette.
Oh really?
And even then, it's close. Oh yeah, they're both. They make Richard look like a small dude.
I'm 6'2", and I literally had to tilt my head to look up at Penn.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. Gigantic.
But both of them, Penn and Teller, fantastic dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And Teller does talk. And guess what? Dude is my height.
Really?
Yeah. He just looks short next to Penn because everyone looks short next to
him. Yeah. Yeah, I always thought he would have been a shorter dude. Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, next time I go to Vegas, I definitely want to go see them for sure.
100%.
You 100%. Totally worth it. Totally worth it.
When we went, it was, I think, $90 per ticket, but it was a wicked cool show. And at the end, they stood out and they gave every single person a photo op and an autograph that wanted it free of charge.
Everybody. That's awesome.
They did that when I went too. Yeah.
And they're also Rebo and Zooty in the Babylon 5 universe.
They are. Zoot, zoot.
Yep.
Oh, man. Actually, I just recently. I haven't watched Babylon 5 in a while. For some reason, I fell out of it, but I watched that episode lately, and it was great.
And I didn't realize it, but like that thing that he uses, like Zoot, that voice is actually Harlan Ellison. I did not know that. But as soon as I was watching that episode, because famous science fiction writer Harlan Ellison, I've been watching a lot of interviews with him because he died a couple years ago. So I'm his voice is ingrained into my brain, and when I rewatched Babylon 5 recently, that's what I picked out. That and he's done a few voiceover episodes, like that one where Babylon 5's AI came online, like when they were trying to change all the passcodes, and this AI's talking to Garibaldi. That's again Harlan Ellison. He also played a psycop. Awesome. But anyway, I digress. We're here to talk about Deep Space Nine, so I guess we should talk about Deep Space Nine. And it's been a while. Like I said, where we left off, at season 5.0, so we've talked about the first, the first 13 episodes of season 5, and now we're moving on to the last 13 episodes of season 5, and we're kicking it off with a bang. So this is series episode 112, 14th of the season, and it's In Purgatory Shadow. Stardate 50560.1, directed by Gabriel Beaumont, written by Robert Hewitt Wolfe and Ira Stephen Baer. Original air date February 10th, 1997. Worf and Garak journey to the Gamma Quadrant to investigate a coded Cardassian message. So this is the episode where, you know, the shit really hits the fan. Garak receives a coded message from an Auburn Tane, so Worf and Garak go into the Gamma Quadrant to track it down, and they find a Dominion fleet in a nebula not too far from the wormhole. So they get captured, but they're able to warn Sisko and the others that a fleet's coming. So now Sisko and the crew of Deep Space Nine are going to collapse the entrance to the wormhole. That's the plan. But little do they know that Dr. Bashir has been replaced by a changeling. And little do they know Gul Dukat is not on their side anymore. He's working with the Dominion. This episode also introduced us to General Martok, the real General Martok this time. He's been being held in a prison camp. We get to see an Auburn Tane again. Unfortunately, he dies in this episode, but we also learn that he is the father of Garrick. And yeah, it ends with the failed attempt to collapse the wormhole and a Dominion fleet emerging from the wormhole at the end of the episode. So I don't know about you guys, but this is one of my favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine. It's amazing, like action-packed. The acting's fantastic. Andrew Robinson, as always, is amazing as Garrick. I love Paul Dooley as an Aubertine, and Mark Alamo as Gul Dukat. You know, he's pissed off. He wants to kill Garrick because he suspects there's some shenanigans going on between him and Zial. And then Dukat loses it on Zial. He basically disowns her by the end of the episode. And yeah, it was a fun reveal, you know, to find, you know, when you find Dr. Bashir at this prison camp in the old, you know, Starfleet uniform, just prior to the new ones that were introduced a few episodes ago. So, you know, he's been there for a few months now. So it makes you think, you know, you got to go back and look at all the episodes leading up to this that, you know, basically since they changed uniforms, Dr. Bashir has been a changeling this whole time. You know, and I love that reveal. Whether it was planned in advance, I don't know, but it was pretty cool nonetheless. But anyway, I digress. Ragnar, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, as a giant fan of General Martok, this is a killer episode for me because you get to meet the real General Martok, and he's just possibly my favorite Klingon of all time. So that was awesome. Of course, the discovery about Dr. Bashir was quite a twist and was quite exciting. And overall, yeah, this is absolutely one of the best episodes of the season and possibly of the whole show. I mean, especially if you consider this and the next one is kind of one joint episode.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Again, just to elaborate, again, one of the best episodes, I think, in all of DS9. It really shows Worf's determination and his honor, like personal honor. So I've learned that, like, there's sort of two kinds of honor. There's personal honor and that kind of, like, showy honor that kind of the Klingons do in their, like, their governmental type things. Like, they got to show, like, they're being honorable. They may not necessarily be honorable.
Mm-hmm.
Worf's personal Klingon honor is second to none. He refuses to, you know, accept defeat, and he continues, and it just shows how much of, like, a legitimate badass that he is. I know people like to harsh on Worf, but I mean, he is a badass. You can't deny that.
Yep.
And then the connection between Worf and Martok is shown, and it just that camaraderie, the brotherhood there, and Garrick going on to the next. Garrick's depth of character is shown even more, you know, and his acting and the portrayal of that is amazing, because if I recall correctly, Andrew Robinson does have some claustrophobia issues, and he was doing the scenes and, you know, having some of the issues, and man, the acting that Andrew Robinson can do is amazing. And you learn all those cool things, you know, you learn that Shear's actually a changeling, and, you know, he, you know, has a plot and all this other stuff. But yeah, one of the best episodes of memory, I think. And then there's some, I think, part of the B plot with Zial and Garrick. That was kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish they would have done more with that. And then when I first saw it and Dukat switched the enemy side, I wasn't even really surprised, you know? It's Dukat, and that's what he does. He thinks he's picking the winning side,
yep.
But he's not.
Yeah.
And again, Dukat, probably one of the best villains in Star Trek history, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
But yeah, top notch. You know, 10 out of 10, would not skip.
Excellent. And Curtis, your thoughts?
Definitely not a skip episode or a nap episode. I think everyone's already said it all. This is easily one of the best episodes of, in my opinion, of the series. Mm-hmm. And I just watched this recently because since we last recorded a podcast, my girlfriend has decided it's time for her to finally watch Deep Space Nine for the first time.
Hey, right? Awesome.
So she's been just binging it. She can't watch anything else because she's, well, we just started season 7 yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So I just having watched this last week or the week before, it's pretty fresh in the mind. It's got all the ingredients. It's got the twist. It's got Cardassian, I don't want to say cleverness. That's not really, but Cardassian cleverness.
Guile? Like Klingon, I would say guile. Would be
there we go.
Yeah, Cardassian guile.
Klingon courage. You know, it's got everything. What else do you want? What more could you ask for of an episode? Ah, I love it.
Excellent. Well, let's roll into part two, and that's episode 113 of the series, 15th of the season, By Inferno's Light, Stardate 50564.2, directed by Les Landau, written by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolfe. Original air date, February 17th, 1997. Gul Dukat aligns the Cardassians with the Dominion. The station must deal with a changeling infiltrator. Part 2 of 2. Again, yeah, this episode just continues the awesomeness. You know, I love, like, Dukat, like what you guys were saying about being one of the best Star Trek villains. I love that he did this. You know, I love, because if you'll remember back, if you'll go back to season 4, when Sisko first met Weyoun, Weyoun told him, "I could make you the leader of Starfleet. No president, no Starfleet chief of staff, just you." And, you know, Sisko kind of laughs at him, right? Laughs it off, right? Well, this is what they do to Dukat. You know, they make a deal with Dukat, and he now becomes the leader of the Cardassians, serving the Dominion. So that comes to fruition in a way. Weyoun's promised or offer to Sisko, but now it's to Dukat instead. I love this episode because we see, you know, the Klingons falling back. You know, like they come back to Deep Space Nine, and Sisko makes a deal with Gowron, you know, to reinstate the Khitomor Accords, to reinstate the alliance between the Federation and the Klingons to fight the Dominion. And then we get that surprise at the end when a fleet of Romulan ships show up, and they show up to help the the Federation and the Klingons fight the Dominion fleet, because Dukat, you know, contacts the Sisko and tells him, like, I want the station back. And Sisko, you know, in one of his badass moments, you know, says, "If you want the station to cut, you can come and take, you know, you can try and take it." Or I can't remember the exact quote, but it's something to that effect. Also, this episode, again, we see Worf, you know, in the fighting ring fighting Jem'Hadar. And, yeah, being, you know, the badass Klingon that he is, he won't give up. You know, he will literally fight to the death. Because that's what a real Klingon will do. Even though Martok himself is saying, you know, "Worf, stand down." And he won't. And then we see some honor in the Jem'Hadar. Because the Jem'Hadar first won't kill him. And then he himself gets killed by his Vorta. The only nitpick, I have about this whole two-parter is when they escape, why did the Dominion leave their runabout in orbit? Like, seriously. You know, they got Worf and Garak, and then they just conveniently leave their runabout in orbit for them to escape. You know, that always bothered me, because I remember at the time, I remember thinking, well, there's got to be a reason. Like, maybe, you know, one of the people they rescued is a changeling that they're taking back with them. You know, like, maybe they're, you know, something to that effect. Like maybe that Romulan lady that they were working with, maybe she's actually a changeling and she wants to, you know, wants to be rescued, right? You know, using air quotes, rescued and brought back. But nothing of that, nothing like that ever happened. So to me, it was always just a little too convenient that that runabout was left in orbit. But I digress. Other than that, it was a perfect two-part episode. Ragnar, your thoughts on part two?
Well, I wanted to build a little bit on what you had said there. The relationship that starts between Martok and Worf is very much like father-son, I always thought. And even when Martok is trying to tell Worf to stand down, he just won't. And you gotta just admire Worf for that.
Yep.
I will definitely agree with you on the runabout thing. Super weird that they would just leave it floating around there. A little too convenient, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really liked the whole bit about like Garak being claustrophobic. I thought that was a really neat touch to learn more about Garak and to see, I guess, a different side of him, you know, a more vulnerable side, perhaps.
Yep.
But yeah, solid follow-up to the last episode. Just overall, really solid. The Dominion are an excellent, villain in this series. And this is an episode that starts to show you why.
Yep. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I'm going to echo what both you said about Worf and just his supreme unyielding nature when it comes to honor. He was defeated, but, you know, he was, could have been killed, but he wasn't really defeated. And Ikatsuka just sort of, like, recognized that. And I don't think that most Jem'Hadar recognize honor, but maybe in a small way they do. Aside from the runabout thing, my other sort of nitpick, and I just kind of chalked this up to runabout-sized plot holes in the script, is that I don't think that Jem'Hadar officer would have actually figured out what that tool was used for so quickly.
Yeah.
He literally looked at it, and then he's like, oh, I know? Because that's the way it was written, but in real life, I don't think that would have been a thing. So those are the two things that I would have take issue with if I was being super particular.
Mm-hmm.
I did really appreciate the scenario with Gowron. He comes back, he re-signs the Kinemur Accords, and the Klingon Federation, you know, get back in bed together.
Yep.
That was good. There was something else. I'm trying to remember. Oh, maybe that's it. Yeah, top-notch episode. The two of these episodes together make one hell of an episode. I really appreciate that. So, yeah, would watch again. Never skip.
Excellent.
But one last thing, though. I like Bashir's sort of, like, troll. He says, that tool is either a self-sealing stem bolt or a reverse ratcheting router. And I just thought that was just classic.
Excellent. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
I don't know that I can say a lot that hasn't already been said. I do agree with Ragnar. The beginning of the whole father-son thing between Worf and Martok is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we know later on, Worf ends up joining his house, yada yada. Spoiler alert, if anyone hasn't seen it.
Spoiler alert!
But no, I think that was a really important time for them. Worf even says to Sisko that, you know, Martok loaned Worf his warrior's heart, as it were, so that he could, you know, do what needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Even though honor had been satisfied, Worf was not going to let these Jem'Hadar think that the Klingons were a bunch of pansies or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was there to throw down. And if that meant he had to die, so be it, because some things are more important.
Yep.
Yeah, no, what more can you ask for? Like I said in the last episode, love it.
Yep. All right. Next episode for the series is 114, 16th of the season. That is Dr. Bashir, I presume. Stardate 50590.1, directed by David Livingston. Story by Jimmy Diggs. Teleplay by Ronald D. Moore. Original air date, February 24th, 1997. Julian Bashir is selected to become the model for a long-term medical hologram until a family secret is revealed. Rom has difficulty in telling Lita something. This another great episode. I loved seeing Robert Picardo as Dr. Zimmerman on Deep Space Nine. I love Robert Picardo. I love that character. I love the idea that, you know, Dr. Bashir is going to be the LMH, the long-term medical program, and that, you know, Dr. Zimmerman is a little ticked because he thinks he should be the model, you know, because he was the model for the EMH. He wants to be the model for the LMH. So he really doesn't like this, you know, young, you know, good-looking guy, and he's really trying his best to sabotage some stuff. And I love, you know, the sequence where they have the interviews, you know, where Dr. Zimmerman's interviewing the different cast of characters, including Morn, who unfortunately we don't actually hear him say anything. And then, yeah, the B story where Rom is in love with Lita, and Dr. Zimmerman is courting Lita, and Rom, you know, she's literally going to go back with Dr. Zimmerman, and he comes running down the hallway screaming, and Lita, you know, and, you know, it's just funny. It was absolutely hilarious. And I love that coupling. You know, Rom is one of my favorite Ferengi, and I just love that he got the good-looking Dabo girl. The revelation that Dr. Bashir is genetically enhanced, I think, is fantastic. It's interesting. It added a new dimension to his character that, going forward, you know, they were able to play with and do new things with Dr. Bashir. I love the scenes with him and his parents. I really like the actors they brought in to play his parents. Overall, in my opinion, it was a good episode, you know, especially, like I said, I love Robert Picardo, so it was great seeing him on Deep Space Nine. Richard, what are your thoughts on this episode?
I enjoy it, and I like to get some more, like, I like the background of Bashir, and I really, really like his parents. Mm-hmm. They're very boisterous. Well, his father's boisterous and exaggerates. You know, he's a bit of a blowhard, but, you know, I feel that, you know, like, mm-hmm. I get that, you know, and his mom, very, very nice and calm and a very nice lady. But Zimmerman just, he pissed me off. And he did Bashir dirty, and that's my boy. Like, he was fucking with my boy, and I did not appreciate that. I get, you know, Zimmerman's a big bad dude, and he knows what he's doing, and he's a hardcore hologram engineer, but I would have just slapped him across the head, because that was dirty. That's not what,
but,
what I would expect, but you know what I mean?
But a testament to Robert Picardo's acting, though.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. My next point was that Robert Picardo killed it again, because that's what he does. And he's just so good. Like, he does the Doctor, he does Zimmerman. He was in Stargate Atlantis and many other things that I can't recall right now.
He was in the Orville.
But, yeah, in the Orville as well. And honestly, I just liked the episode a lot. And it was the B plot about Nog and Lita and Zimmerman. I think it would have been a huge mistake to go Zimmerman, because, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Nog is...
Rom.
Nog's Nog.
Rom.
Right, Rom, right.
That's okay.
Baby brain.
It's all good.
Rom's pretty much like the most innocent, most honest, straight up dude in the whole show. Like, I don't honestly pick somebody else. Maybe Nog, who is as like legit, forthright, honest. You know, we could talk about Sisko too, and he's great, but he's flawed. You know, he had to do some things he didn't want to do. But Rom, nah, man, that dude, he deserved to get the girl in the end. Yep. Good episode. I do not skip this one.
Excellent. I just wanted to add, like I mentioned about Robert Picardo's acting, I loved Alexander Siddig's acting, like in that one, like especially in that one scene where he has to play the hologram version of himself, but he's a hologram version, but he's got the personality of Zimmerman. So to see, you know, Alexander Siddig act like Robert Picardo was absolutely brilliant. Really, really great acting. Curtis, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, first, just one nitpick, if I will. It's actually wait is what he yells as he's running down the hallway.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Wait. Yeah. So it's one of the funniest things that happens in the whole series. So I felt like I had to point it out. Yep, just watched this one recently, too. And I can't pontificate much more than what's already been said. It's absolutely hilarious. Robert Picardo, always an absolute joy to watch on screen. And, of course, we're all used to him playing the – I'm not even sure how to describe the Doctor. He's not irritated. He's something.
He's enigmatic.
Eh.
I would use that word.
He's something anyway. Yeah. It's cool to see him be such a different character. But, look, you know, just bring the same face and –
yeah,
all those things. Yeah, super cool episode. Hilarious. Much needed comic relief.
Mm-hmm. And Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I just wanted to mention two things. The first one was I've been watching The Golden Girls recently, and excellent. Robert Picardo was in an episode of that as a doctor. And I thought that was hilarious to see him all the way back from 1985.
Which season?
The very first season.
Oh, I must have missed that. Must have missed that episode.
He looks exactly the same.
Too. Oh yeah,
He
was also on The Wonder Years. He was the coach on The Wonder Years.
Oh wow!
And there was a show called China Beach. He was also on that as well.
Yeah,
he doesn't age. He's ageless.
Nope. Yeah, basically. And then I also wanted to say that I really like Brian George, the actor who plays Bashir's father. He's been in tons and tons of stuff, too, usually smaller bit parts. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing him when he came out as Bashir's father and going, oh, man, that's such a good choice for his dad. Like, that was so well cast, I thought. And then I also really liked the whole, you know, backstory about Bashir and, like, his dark, dirty little secret, which, of course, comes into play many times throughout the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it's a good episode. And if you like Bashir as a character and you also like, you know, the Doctor from Voyager, then you really can't skip this one.
Yeah. And, again, one of the things I loved about it was when they were doing the interviews and they get to Chief O'Brien. And he's like, you're sure he's not going to hear this? You know, this is confidential. Okay. And then you think, well, maybe he's going to start talking about how annoying he was and all this other stuff. But he doesn't. He talks about what a great person he is, what a great friend he is. Like, it was such a testament to how far they've come. You know, how far their friendship has come from, like, season three to now. I just love that little touch.
Yep.
That's totally an O'Brien thing, too. You know, like, if he's got a problem with you, he'll come to your face, but he won't talk to you behind your back. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right. So the next episode is episode 115 of the series, 17th of the season. And that's A Simple Investigation. Stardate 50606.6, directed by John T. Kretschmer, written by Rene Echevarria. Original air date March 31st, 1997. Odo falls in love with a woman, Arissa, involved in the Orion Syndicate. Not one of my favorite episodes. It was okay. You know, especially after all these really good episodes that have, you know, we've just been punching through. This was, honestly, this is one I kind of skip sometimes when I do my rewatches. But yeah, it was awesome to see Odo get a little bit of action, get to see him, you know, play the, you know, kind of a little bit of a badass going against the Orion Syndicate. But not a bad episode, just not one that I always catch when I do my rewatches. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
I'm with you. It's there's certainly nothing wrong with it, per se, but it's not particularly engaging. One of the things I do enjoy, though, is the two fellows who are from the Orion Syndicate. The two guys who came to meet up with the woman and get the little chip thing.
Yeah,
their personalities just, I get such a kick out of them. And it's such a contrast compared to, I think his name's Bilby, the guy that O'Brien goes and infiltrates at one point.
Yeah.
Such a contrast. Like the one with O'Brien in the later episodes is so somber and formal and solemn. And these two that we've got in this episode, they're just goons completely. It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
They're like the two stooges. So I appreciate that. And to me, it's sort of a kind of a fun episode. But if I feel a nap coming on, I don't fight it. You know what I'm saying?
Excellent. Ragnar, your thoughts?
This is definitely not one of my favorite episodes. And for sure in this season, if you were looking for an episode to skip, this would be one that you could skip. And yeah, I don't think you'd miss too much. It's not a bad episode, but yeah, it just didn't stand out. Didn't have that Deep Space Nine magic that a lot of the other episodes this season had.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to see Odo, I guess, you know, as more of a sexual person. That was sort of interesting because, of course, we always wonder, like, what's his deal? But you know, they did stuff like that a little bit with Data on Next Gen, and that was a lot more interesting, I thought, than how they did it with Odo in DS9.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, overall, yeah, it's okay episode.
Excellent. And Richard, your thoughts?
I'm going to agree with Curtis. The two Enforcer dudes from the Orion Syndicate were kind of quirky, and I like their kind of like repartoire. Something. You know what I'm going for there.
Rapport. Oh, okay.
Yeah, with each other. They played well with each other. They were fun to watch on screen. I was intrigued that at that point in the future that there are places that still basically have like prostitution because she was a net girl. And I don't really understand the concept of how that would work, but I was just crazy how that technology works with the neural implants. One of the guys in the episode with Bilby had one, and that was really cool to see. One thing I did notice, though, is that when Arissa and Odo are in bed together, he admits to her that she's the first woman he's ever been with, and she was surprised and said that she couldn't tell. So that means that Odo's done some in-depth studying on human mating rituals or humanoid mating rituals. And I thought that was a little clever insight, knowing that, you know, Odo's probably watched some porn, their version of it anyways. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, of just course, a bunch of amorphous blobs intermingling.
Right? And I always thought to myself, like, okay, I mean, if you have any underage people, like, you know, stop listening for a second. But how does it work for a changeling? Does he get to, like, complete the job? Or, like, I don't know. That's just, you know, interesting to think about.
Well, briefly, if he did, it'd be like a blood test, right? It would revert back to its liquid state.
I mean, you know, yeah, so I thought that's kind of cool. But I like the part where Odo busts into Bashir's limo. And he's like, I need advice on a woman kind of stuff. And it just, that was a great little, like, bit there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you've never watched it, you need to watch it because there's a couple of tie-ins for continuity's sake. but it's not an episode that you have to watch every time. It's got a little bit of continuity. It is a skipper if you've seen it and you understand the story. But other than that, like, it's a decent filler episode is what it is. I do like to talk about Hasperet. I really want to try Hasperet, like really good, hot Hasperet. But that's all I got to say about that episode.
Excellent. All right, so the next episode is episode 116, 18th of the season, and it's Business as Usual. Stardate 50675.5, directed by Sadig El Fadil, also known as Alexander Sadig, also known as Dr. Bashir, written by Bradley Thompson and David Weddle. Original air date, April 7th, 1997. Quark's cousin Gala, knowing Quark is desperate for funds, takes him on as a junior partner in his highly lucrative arms dealing business. With his mother Keiko away dealing with a plague on Bajor, Yoshi O'Brien will only stop crying when Miles holds him, making things difficult. The B story, kind of whatever. It's, you know, I thought it was kind of funny when Worf was holding Kiryoshi and he managed to get him to stop crying. That was funny. I like the introduction of Gala. We finally get to see him. I thought this was a good episode in, you know, seeing Quark's dilemma. You know, like he needs money. He's not making money. You know, he's still the FCA has still got his Ferengi business license. He's having a hard time, you know, coming up with some money. So Gala throws him a lifeline, but at the same time, he realizes that what he's doing, the weapons he's selling is being used to kill people, and he's having a hard time dealing with that. You know, some good acting from Armin Shimmerman, I thought, you know, with when they did the, you know, the dream sequences. In my opinion, it was a good episode. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I really like this episode. Whether you call it a filler episode or whatever you want to call it, it's a kick-ass episode. Haggith is just tremendous. He's kind of evil, kind of not. Mm-hmm. He's a bit of a bad guy. He's a gunrunner, but he's smart, and he does good business. And it was really nice to see, like, Quark, you know, getting out of the rut that he's in. He's making some real money. He's paying off his debts. He's got people that are like, oh, you know, now you've got real money, I better come and, like, kiss your hand, basically. And then Sisko with his, like, in-his-face sort of tongue-lashing. And I thought that Kira was going to go on with it, and then she's like, nah, and just basically what he said. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yep.
And then the plot twist at the end where they, you know, put the two leaders together, and it's just a running firefight to the airlock, and it was a good episode. I really like it, and I like most Ferengi episodes because Quark's pretty much the coolest Ferengi, like most entertaining around. Mm-hmm. So yeah, great episode. Really like it.
Excellent. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, I dig it. It's a Ferengi episode, so, you know it's going to be a lot of comic relief and a little bit of a break from the main overarching story, which is cool, because at this point we've been beaten over the head that we're in this war and yada yada. So between this episode and the last one, it's sort of a nice break. Cousin Gala, I'm a huge fan. I don't know what it is about the way the actor portrays him, but his speech patterns and the way he chooses to emphasize certain inflections a little bit oddly, in my opinion. I don't know. It makes him a really appealing character for me to watch. Super entertaining. Mm-hmm. Not sure if I can add much more than just blathering on, so I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I just I really wanted to say I really enjoyed watching Quark struggle with the fact that he has a conscience.
we sort of know that already. We've seen bits and pieces of evidence towards that. But this episode for sure comes out that, yeah, this guy actually does have a conscience. Mm-hmm. And despite all of his greedy little plots and schemes, he has a code of honor that he more or less sticks to. And I really appreciated that and enjoyed, you know, seeing the exploration of that side of Quark. Otherwise, yeah, I just have to agree with all of you guys about the points you brought up. It's a great episode. I definitely recommend it. And as far as the Ferengi-centric ones go, this one isn't too goofy, because sometimes they get too goofy.
Yeah. Excellent. All right, so next episode is episode 117 of the series, 19th of the season, and that is Ties of Blood and Water, stardate 50712.5, directed by Avery Brooks, story by Edmund Newton and Robin L. Slocum, teleplay by Robert Hewitt Wolfe, original air date April 14th, 1997. T'Kenny Gamor, who we met in the third season, episode 5 of the third season, arrives on Deep Space Nine and reveals that he is dying. The man who thought that Kira was actually his Cardassian daughter has come back, and Kira unfortunately finds out some stuff. Apparently he's coming to Deep Space Nine basically not just the fact that he's dying, but he has some evidence and some intel that he's willing to share with the Federation in regards to the new Cardassian government. So of course we get Gul Dukat showing up, and we get the reveal of Wei-Yun in this episode. Last time we saw Wei-Yun was in season 4, and he was killed. And in this episode, we find out that Vorda are actually cloned. And this current Wei-Yun is the most current clone of Wei-Yun. I thought that was a nice touch. I liked T'Kenny Gamor. I liked that actor. And this was, in my opinion, a well-written episode. The dilemma that Kira faces, you know, like she sees this Cardassian, you know, is almost like a father figure now. Because of their connection with what happened in season 3, episode 5. But then she finds out that he was responsible for the death of Bajorans during the occupation, and she's having a hard time dealing with that. You know, she feels betrayed. Excellent acting from Nana Visitor. I really felt that this episode was well directed by Avery Brooks, Captain Sisko. And, on the surface, this would seem like an episode that you could skip, but I wouldn't skip it if I was recommending it to anybody, because, like I said, the acting from Nana Visitor and, some of the revelations in this episode make it worth it, I think. Curtis, what are your thoughts?
I'm not a fan. I'm going to be honest. I tried to watch this one, and I had to sit through it recently because, of course, Katie's never seen it before. So I'm certainly not going to recommend any first-timers skip any of the episodes. But I don't know. I have a really hard time maintaining any kind of attention span throughout this episode. It's a snoozer or a skipper for me, for sure.
All right. Nothing wrong with that. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
This episode bothers me because I like the concept that they made a strong enough bond despite their differences to maintain a relationship, but it also just doesn't ring true to me for Kira to make a bond like that. And really, the person she makes a bond like that with eventually is, Ziel, mm-hmm. Gul Dukat's daughter. And that one I found believable, but I always kind of struggle with this one and I just don't quite buy it. So this tends to be an episode that I skip just for that reason.
All right. Richard, your thoughts?
I would personally disagree With that, Ragnar, for me, it seems plausible because, you know, she lost her father at a young age, and she probably hasn't had a lot of, like, really good father figures. And what she does know about him and then what she learns about him, you know, and there's, to me at least, it does feel as though that familial bond is there. And, you know, she's trying to, like, get past a lot of things. And I know there's a lot of hatred between, or especially from Bajorans to Cardassians. So it kind of, that feels believable to me. And I like the idea of, like, learning a bit more about Cardassian culture with the Shrital ceremony and, you know, passing on all the information. That just makes so much sense as far as, like, Cardassian culture and how they're just so, like, secretive and they like information and knowledge and all of that and very, very politically active. Dukat being a Dukat, I should make that into, like, a some kind of Cardassian slur. Like, stop being such a Dukat. You know what I mean? I thought it was great. And then the whole, like, poisoned Kanar fiasco. Mm-hmm. And then Weyoun goes in for a shot, and he's like, oh, yeah, that's really toxic. That was just, oh, man, Jeffrey Combs, he kills me. And I don't usually skip it once in a while. It's probably like in every other skip.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like it, and, you know, I appreciate sort of like what they were going for. To be fair, it did seem a little bit forced, a little bit. But I kind of got past it because I like that idea that, like, you know, Kira could find some semblance of, like, a, you know, a good father figure, even though, like, you know, it was a Cardassian that did bad things and he regrets it. And I think he was honestly regretful about it. And then she arranges to have him buried right next to her father on Bajor, which I thought was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I like it. I like it.
One thing that I always kind of like, one of the things that they kind of left hanging that I wish they would have addressed at some point during the show is whatever did happen to his daughter, like his real daughter, to Kenny Gamore's daughter.
Yeah.
Because in that episode, like season 3, episode 5, he shows Kira a video that his daughter recorded before she went undercover, right? Before she went in to be surgically altered to look like a Bajoran. And it's Nana Visitor as a Cardassian in that recording. So in my mind, that means that there's got to be a woman out there who looks exactly like Kira, who's actually a Cardassian and either, you know, has amnesia or, you know, maybe she was killed. I don't know. But I always kind of hope that they would somehow bring her into it and that, you know, we would, you know, find out what happened to her, you know, maybe even have her be a villain or something. Like, I think, you know, I think that would have been interesting to see. But anyway, I digress. The next episode is episode 118 of the series, 20th of the season, and that is Ferengi Love Songs. Stardate 507-01.2, directed by René Auberjonois, written by Ira Steven Baer and Hans Beimler, original air date April 21st, 1997. So I just want to point out, this is the third episode in a row that's directed by one of the stars of the show. At the end of his rope, Quark returns home and discovers Moogie has a secret lover. Yeah, this is one of my favorite Ferengi episodes. I love it. You know, Moogie is with Grand Nagazek, you know, and I love that reveal, like when Quark goes into his room and finds the Nagus hiding in his closet, and then he's about to run out the door, and then he's, wait a minute, why is the Nagus in my closet? I love that. I love, you know, the reveal that Moogie is, you know, that Grand Nagus, unfortunately, is getting a little senile, he's getting older, and that it's Moogie that's, you know, basically helping him run the Ferengi Alliance. Jeffrey Combs, of course, as Liquidator Brunt. I love that. I love the ending. You know, Quark gets his license to do business with Ferengi back. So Quark, you know, kind of like when Worf was dishonored and he got his honor back, Quark gets his honor back. And yeah, I love Wallace Shawn. Anytime he shows up, you know, even in the episodes where they're not as great, you know, I still love seeing Wallace Shawn. He always fantastic as the Grand Nagus. And yeah, I just one of my favorite Ferengi episodes. Ragnar, what's your thoughts?
Well, pretty much have to just echo what you've said. This is a really fun episode, especially for the Ferengi ones. Mm-hmm. Wallace Shawn dominates every second of the screen that he's on. And, you know, overall it was interesting, too, to start to explore, you know, what happens when a woman starts dating the Grand Nagus, because, of course, that takes us down some interesting paths for Ferengi culture later on.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I would... You know, especially as somebody who loves the Ferengi episodes, this is a great one. And even if you don't like the Ferengi ones, this one isn't too goofy and overall does contribute to the later on plot. So I would recommend watching it.
Excellent. Richard, your thoughts?
Richard. I don't know what else I can say about it. It's a great episode. I like that they're, you know, quoting the rules of acquisition, because that's like cornerstone of, you know, Ferengi culture.
Mm-hmm.
And then they threw in the Tonga tournament. Now they have the women playing in the basement. And that was made me a chuckle about that, just given how they treat women and stuff. So it kind of makes sense.
Yep.
Not that I'm like supporting that. I'm just saying, you know, I was like, it's an interesting twist in their culture.
Yep.
And I know he never talks, but I love Mehar Doom. I don't know, man. Something about that guy, you know, I just think is awesome.
One thing I love about seeing him is, like, because he has to duck through every doorway he goes through, right, on Ferengi, on Ferenginar. And you could tell, like, it hurts his back. Like, he always flinches every time he does it.
Yeah, but he basically has to get used to it because, you know, he's basically indentured to... the Nagus, and I mean, what more can you say about Wallace Shawn? The dude is a phenomenal actor. He's played in a million things, and he's just awesome. But I actually really, really like sort of like Ferengi, like architecture. I like the idea, like the way they have their homes. I like all of that. It rains probably like a little bit too much, but I like the rain, so I'm not too worried about it. But yeah, all in all, it's a great episode. You know, there's a lot of like interplay, and you get to learn a lot of things. And yeah, I really enjoy it.
I love the fact that when you go to someone's house on Ferenginar, there's like a tip jar as soon as you walk through the door. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, you guys all hit the nail squarely on the head, which is funny because they're usually round. Definitely one of the better Ferengi episodes, and I love me my Ferengi episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Like you say, just Quark discovering the Nagus in his closet, and Zek pulling it off like a champ, just, what are you doing here, Quark? Like, I love it. Awesome scene. And was watching with the girlfriend the other day, and I was like, do you realize who plays Zek? And she said, no. I said, Wallace Shawn. She looked at me like I had two heads.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, have you ever seen The Princess Bride? And it's like she was staring right through me, and I went, "Oh no!" So I had to play her the scene with her and Dread. With him and Dread Pirate Roberts from The Princess Bride, and she finally flew in. So that was kind of fun. But no, definitely one of the better Ferengi episodes. I can't think of anything to add that hasn't already been said.
All right. All right, so next episode is episode 119, 21st of the season, and that's Soldiers of the Empire. Stardate 50839.2, directed by LeVar Burton, written by Ronald D. Moore, original air date April 28th, 1997. And I'll point out that this is the fourth episode in a row directed by a Star Trek star, This was directed by Geordi LaForge. So Martok, Worf, and Dax go on a mission aboard a Klingon ship to search for a missing Klingon vessel. However, Martok's uneasiness about battle as a result of his captivity affects his crew's morale. I really like this episode. I love, Worf having to basically Klingon slap Martok into being the warrior that he needs to be, that he was, right? I love, Dax, her interactions with the Klingons, I love it, because she's a Klingon at heart, I think. This was just, it was a great Klingon episode, I thought. I thought it was very good. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I really liked this episode, honestly. And I think they touch on the fact that Worf sort of borrowed Martok's warrior spirit when he was in the internment camp. I think that Worf basically had to lend him the same warrior spirit of his own, because he was trepidatious about going into battle, and he was trying to avoid it, and it was causing problems on the ship. But he did it, and he did it well, and they had a victory, and everything was awesome again. So I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, kind of a big deal to me. And then, like, the Klingon, drinking songs, which I love. I think I have a couple of them on my playlist. Worf gets a little stabbed, but he's fine, he's a Klingon, he can take it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember what the B plot was about. I was too focused on, the good part of the plot.
To be honest with you, I don't know either.
I don't even know. Was there a B plot? I'm sure there was. But either way, this also is the episode where Worf is accepted into the House of Martok. But what happened to the young human boy who became part of the House of Mo? Did he just get forgotten? Like, I wish they would have done more about that from TNG, where they had the Rustai ceremony and all that fun stuff. But he gets to be part of the House of Martok, and it's pretty bad, eh? Great episode, never a skipper, and it's awesome.
I don't think there is a B for this one. I think this is it. I think this is just about them on the Klingon Bird of Prey.
Excellent. And LeVar Burton directing kicking ass again. That was really well done, I think.
Yeah, agreed. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Love it. I'm not as big on the Klingons as Richard and Ragnar are, but I do have some appreciation for them, and this is probably one of my favorite Klingon episodes, because it gets more into like the interpersonal exchanges that can happen on board a Klingon ship, and we get to see a little bit further into their command structure than we did. Like, we got a peek when Riker was first officer for a day, but
yep.
I don't know. It was just cool to really see, like, you've got this disgruntled crew and they're not really proud of their battle record, and what the hell, we've never seen that from Klingons before.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a nice little change of pace and to see the other side of the inside of the Klingon world. Definitely an enjoyable episode. Never skip it.
Excellent. And Ragnar.
Hang on, sorry.
Oh, sorry, Richard, go ahead.
I forgot one thing. I just want to pop in here real quick. This is an episode where Worf wears a traditional Klingon Empire uniform when he's serving on the Klingon ship. But in later episodes, he's wearing a Federation uniform. I personally don't care for that. I think that he should have been wearing a Klingon outfit every time he's serving on a Klingon ship. And that's all I got to say about that.
He looks badass in his Klingon uniform, that's for sure. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I always call this episode How Martok Got His Groove Back.
I was thinking that, too. Excellent.
And yeah, this is a stellar episode, especially if, like Richard and I, you're a fan of Klingons and Klingon culture. Mm-hmm. We get to see some more of it, and we also get to see something we don't normally see, of course, with Klingons being, you know, sort of embarrassed about the status of their ship and their commander. And yeah, this is a stellar episode. Definitely, definitely one of my favorites and one I always, always watch.
Perfect. All right, so the next episode of the series, it's episode 120, 22 of the season, and that's Children of Time, Stardate 50814.2, directed by Alan Croker, story by Gary Holland and Ethan H. Kalk. Kalk? Sorry. I don't know if it's Kalk or Kalk. I'm not sure. Teleplay by Renee Echevarria. Original air date, May 5th, 1997. An accident causes the crew to meet their own descendants and presents them with an ethical dilemma. This was a good episode. A neat concept, for sure. You know, this is also the episode where the older Odo tells Kira, or professes his love for her. And then, yeah, at the end of the episode, he's the one that ends up saving them. And basically dooming that colony of descendants of the Defiant to not exist anymore. Yeah, not the greatest episode, but I thought it was all right. You know, I thought it was neat, you know, like how, you know, Dax is carried on as well. And then there's, you know, Worf's descendants, you know, some of them you could tell are actually descendants by blood and some are descendants by choice. You know, they've chosen to live a Klingon life. But yeah, it's not one of the greatest episodes, but it's a pretty good episode, I think. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
I really enjoy it. I think it's like the writers were just having a fun thought experiment in the break room one day.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, what would happen if? And they just started spitballing and they were like, dude, we should write that episode. And I'm glad they did.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, I have a lot of fun just like they're just thinking it up for us so we don't have to, because it's the kind of thing that a fan might write a fanfic about. Which kind of just makes it a little bit more enjoyable to me. It's outside of the main plot again. You know, we've been beaten over the head. It's a war. The war is on. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the writers really do a good job of sort of, yes, that's the overarching story, but here, look, we're also, there's other stories to tell at the same time, so it's not just the same thing week after week. So I appreciate that. And I also really like the new Klingons,
mm-hmm.
where it's, you know, I think they still have, you know what, I don't know that for sure, so I'm not going to say that. I thought they had Worf's original mechleth, but I don't know that for sure.
I know they have his batleth. I know that for sure.
Okay, that's what it was. All right, yeah, no, totally awesome episode. I really enjoy it. 8 out of 10.
Excellent. Ragnar, your thoughts?
I'm going to have to say 8 out of 10, too. This is a solid, solid episode. Very thought-provoking. And one of my favorite parts about it is how Odo has evolved and looks different. I thought that was such a great touch.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, over 200 years, he got better at shape-shifting and he looks more human. And then, of course, you know, what he does at the end of the episode... out of his love for Kira. Wow, just stellar, stellar episode. I would say as far as the time travel episodes go, I guess it's not really a time travel one, but, you know, playing with alternate timelines and stuff, this is a very good episode.
Excellent. And Richard, your thoughts?
I'm going to go ahead and agree. This is definitely an 8 out of 10 episode. And just to confirm for you, Curtis, Brota, the leader of the Sons of Moat, does in fact have Worf's Mechleth.
Nice. I wasn't totally out to lunch.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, it's way cooler than my Mechleth, but I mean, at least I got one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't have a Mechleth. What are you talking about?
So, I got a couple of things to say about this episode. I love the episode. It is an awesome episode. It causes a lot of introspection, a lot of thought-provoking scenarios, and I really appreciate that, like, Dax was carried on, and they sort of went through all of that, and, you know, seeing all the names, and, you know, seeing who people kind of ended up with, and things like that. One thing I did notice is that one of the direct descendants of Worf, Rota, I believe he's a direct descendant, he looks just like the Klingons from TOS. Mm. If you look at him, he has almost no ridges. And I'm trying to think of it all together, because TOS, the way they looked was in canon because of the virus. So my thought with this is that his bloodline is so, I guess you could say, impure, that he looks more human than Klingon. But I just think it's cool how it kind of went back to looking like that. My only issue really with the episode is that I think that it was poorly placed. I know that we're getting beat over the head with the war and the Dominion, but for some reason, excuse me, I don't think that they would be going out on a mission of this nature basically during a war. I don't know, like, I could be wrong, but it just seems a little bit out of place, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, I see it as a time travel episode, and I think it's one of the best ones, and it's just hugely introspective, and you get to learn things, and the evolution of Odo, he looks so much more humanoid, and yeah, it is, like, fantastic episode. And I like how at the end, you know, the Klingons show up and they're like, our enemy is time. We have to fight time and get this done. So that was actually, you know, another show of like personal honor. And I thought that was pretty fantastic. And that little bit about Quark being the math teacher. Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Never skip.
And you bring up a good point, like, about, you know, during this time, during a war, you know, would they really go on a mission? I got to say, like, and it's not just Deep Space Nine. Babylon 5 also does this, right? And it's something that always bugs me. So, yeah, you have your space station, but you've also got your ship, too, that you go out on missions and so on and so forth. Do you really take all the command staff with you every time? Like, you know, like, especially, like, yeah, during a war, you'd think you'd leave, you know, one, you know, like, Kira or Dax or somebody back on Deep Space Nine, just in case the Dominion decides to show up. You know what I mean? And that's something that always bugged me on Babylon 5, too. You know, everyone leaves on the White Star, and yet, like, who's in charge? You know, like, who's running the station? Like, what if, you know, the Shadows show up? You know what I mean? So and I know, you know, with it being a TV show, they want to have all, you know, because these actors are being paid for every episode, right? All the main stars. That's why pretty much every episode they have at least one scene, you know, whether they just have one line or they're just, you know, you just see them in the background. They, you know, the production studio, this one being Paramount, tends to have them there. Right? Because they're being paid. So, like, for example, in this episode, like, Quark was, you know, they made a computer program, and he was the math teacher, right? It's, you know, the whole reason why they had him there was because they're paying Armin Shimmerman for that episode, whether he's there or not. So they want to, you know, get some, you know, they want to get their money's worth, right? So it always bugs me. That's one of my nitpicks about the station shows, is that, you know, everyone leaves, and then who's in charge of the station? You know? It's like on Battlestar Galactica, the new one. Like, you know, that one episode where everyone gets drunk. It's like, who's in command if the Cylons decide to attack? You know what I mean? Like, you can't all be hammered. But anyway, I could ramble on. I'll move on. So the next episode is episode 121, 23rd of the season, and that is Blaze of Glory. Stardate 50862.4, directed by Kim Friedman, written by Robert Hewitt Wolf and Ira Stephen Baer. Original air date May 12, 1997. An act of desperation by the Maquis could plunge the Federation into war. The Maquis have 30 cloaked missiles headed toward Cardassia, which will cause an outbreak of war in the Alpha Quadrant. I like this episode. I thought it was a fitting end to Michael Eddington. I'm glad that they brought him back, and I'm glad that he, using air quotes, got to go out in a blaze of glory. And yeah, at the same time, it's also kind of sad to see the Maquis basically decimated now. But I mean, you would think that would happen, you know, like, you know, the Maquis were a thorn in the Cardassian side, and now that they have these very powerful allies with the Dominion, you'd figure, yeah, they're gonna take them out, just the way they forced the Klingons out of their territory. And yeah, it was, like I said, a great send-off for the character Michael Eddington. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
It did seem a little, like, I, watching this episode, I always thought it was going to be a big twist, you know, that this was part of a plot to break out Eddington. And when he, you know, dies at the end, I was always kind of surprised that they killed him off. I thought for sure this was going to be a, you know, a thorn in Sisko's side for the rest of the series. So I was kind of surprised at that. But, you know, Eddington, to a certain extent, redeems himself a little bit, and he gets a, you know, quote-unquote good death. And, yeah, I think it's a pretty good episode, and if you've been following the Eddington subplot, well, you probably want to see its conclusion here.
Mm-hmm. I should also point out that the B story on this episode, Cadet Nog earns the respect of the Klingon soldiers on the station by learning how to stand up to them. I love that. I loved, you know, when he went to go arrest General Martok for loitering. I thought that was fantastic. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I actually really liked this episode. I will say that Nog standing up to Martok was great, and that's a good way to deal with the Klingons. He knows that he can't, like, physically fight them, but he did stand up, and it showed the Klingons that this small man has honor, and they respect that.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the, you know, the main plot about the missiles and Eddington, and it was that kind of back and forth, Eddington and Sisko. I really, really like that. And there was a bit in the episode where Jake insists to Nog that he needs to call before he comes over, like, comes back to the quarters if he has a girl over, and I'm like, that's not how roommates work, man. Go back, go in your room and do your thing there. Like, I've had roommates and I've had girls over. You don't get to tell your roommate that he has to call you to make sure it's okay to come home.
Yeah.
That's not okay, to be honest. Like if Curtis had, you know, said to me, like, you got to call me first, I would say, you know what, screw that, man, I'm coming home either way, that's where I live. Like, he never would, just to be honest. But, like, if he did, that's, like, not something you, I don't think that was cool of Jake, because that's just not fair. Aside from that, great episode. I like the B plot with the, you know, the Klingons, and yeah, awesome episode. Really dig it.
Excellent. And Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
It's mostly been said. It is a really good episode. I was sad to see Eddington go. I kind of liked having him around. I feel like he could have been a pain in Sisko's ass a few more times.
Mm-hmm.
His appreciation, he just sort of brought this flavor with him to the screen that just no one else really had that. And he was a nice distraction. I almost think Sisko needed him. a little bit because he's so busy thinking about the Dominion and the war and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. I think it would have been more fun to drag it out a bit longer. But, yeah, I'm happy with how they sent him out. He got to be the hero that he always wanted to think he was. And that was good enough for him.
Yep. One thing I always kind of wish that they had explored was, you know, like maybe using them, like the Federation teaming up with the Maquis, you know, since they had, you know, had their ways of getting past the Cardassians. But yeah, it's at the same time, it's understandable that, you know, Dukat would focus on getting rid of them since they were such a nuisance to them.
Well, I also think it was fun because Eddington was right about one thing. He did expose a flaw in Sisko.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really good for us as an audience was to see that.
Yep.
Like, he's not just this Jean-Luc Picard-esque god figure who never fails. You know, he's got some real flaws, and he's not perfect.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right, so the next episode is 122 of the series, 24th of the season, and that's M'Pok Noor. Stardate 50901.7, directed by Mike Viger. Story by Brian Fuller, teleplay by Hans Beimler. Original air date, May 19th, 1997. O'Brien, Garrick, Nog, and an engineering team go to Deep Space Nine's abandoned sister station, M'Pok Noor, to salvage components. The away team soon discovers that all is not as it seems. This is a fantastic episode. I love this episode. One thing I used to love about the original series is when we would see other Constitution-class ships, right? And really, you know, like we saw the USS Defiant, we saw, you know, a number of other Constitution-class vessels, the Constellation, for example. And really, it's a way for them to using air quotes, do a bottle episode where they basically just redress their existing sets to pass it off as another place. I always used to love that. Like when you'd see Kirk and them on a different ship, but you know it's the same sets as the Enterprise, right? But it's using air quotes, a different ship. So in this episode, seeing M'Pok Noor, which is, you know, the exact duplicate of Tarok Noor, which is Deep Space Nine, I thought it was brilliant. You know, they just redressed it, made it look a little bit more shoddy. So that part was awesome. And Andrew Robinson, you know, he is amazing as a villain. Like, he, you know, and I love the exchange between him and O'Brien. You know, basically they have to, you know, it comes down to them. Right. And, you know, Garrick being the villain and O'Brien having to be the hero. And they're fantastic. Like Colm Meaney and Andrew Robinson are both fantastic actors. Seeing them square off against each other was amazing. So good. It was so great to see Garrick in a villain role. And I'm just glad that he didn't die. You know, I'm glad that you know, they were able to bring him back. And that, you know, it would have been so easy for O'Brien to kill him, right? And most people would have. But he managed to save him. And, yeah, what we got, in my opinion, is just a fantastic episode. It's a thriller. It's a thriller in space. Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I actually really liked this episode. It had some action. And it showed Garrick's skill. You know, he basically went around and was able to just knock everybody off. You know, like it was a game of what's it called? The game, the Cardassian chess or whatever it's called. I can't remember now. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Kotra. Great episode. You know, and Chief O'Brien's like engineering knowledge, because he's not a soldier anymore. He's an engineer now. And yeah, I thought it was fantastic. Really good episode. I'm not sure much more to say about it, that it was really cool. I do like that they used the same set and just made it really dark and dingy and added a few things, and that was pretty great.
Excellent. Curtis, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd echo the same. It was super cool how they didn't just redress the set. They redressed the hell out of it. And it looked great.
Mm-hmm.
Having it sitting at an angle, which in space is just ludicrous. But, yeah. It worked. It worked. It put that image in your head. In your head, you're now in that weirdly tilted space station instead of the, properly upright one, as absurd as that is in space.
Mm-hmm.
Man. Andrew Robinson playing Garak, of course, my favorite character in the series. Who wouldn't love to see him outside of his usual role, which, of course, is my favorite sort of episode. I don't know if I have anything to add to what Richard said, but definitely not a skip episode.
Mm-hmm. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, it just occurred to me while I was listening to you guys discuss your takes on this episode that Garak isn't a main character. He's not in the main cast list.
Nope.
They could have killed him at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And that just occurred to me now that, this in particular would have been a perfect episode to actually kill him. And, man, I am so glad they didn't, because he is such a fascinating and wonderful part of the show. Other than that, I agree with you guys. This is a very fun episode to watch. I love how they recycled the sets. And, this is a really suspenseful episode. Definitely would recommend it.
Excellent. All right. The next episode is episode 123 of the series, 25th of the season. And that is In the Cards. Stardate 50929.4. Directed by Michael Dorn. And I should point out this is his directorial debut. Story by Truly Barr Clark and Scott J. Neal. Teleplay by Ronald D. Moore. Original air date June 9th, 1997. Jake wants to give his father a present to cheer him up. A 1951 Willie Mays baseball card. He enlists Nog to help him obtain it, but they run into complications with a mysterious geneticist, Dr. Geiger. Kai Winn, worried over the prospect of a Federation-Dominion war and its effects on Bajor, meets with Dominion representative Weyoun. So this is the episode where the idea of a non-aggression pact between Bajor and the Federation comes up. And, Jake is trying to get this baseball card. And I just want to confirm what I said. This episode marks the directorial debut of Michael Dorn. Yes, so I got that right. This was a fun episode. I like when Nog and Jake basically get abducted by the Dominion, because Wayun's quarters are underneath that doctor's quarters that they're trying to negotiate with, and he thinks something's going on. He thinks that maybe they're spying on him. It definitely was a good light episode considering what we're going into. The idea of a non-aggression pact at first, is not, I know Kira's against it and everyone's upset about it, but it actually made sense and actually worked out, as we'll find out later on for Bajor. That's probably what saved them. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Well, like you say, this is an absolutely charming episode. I love Dr. Geiger. He's probably my favorite one-off character who just shows up for an episode and does his thing. I think it's just a hilarious episode. Is anyone else just dying to know who the hell the soulless minions of Orthodoxy are? Yes, I have been wondering that shit absolutely for so damn long.
Years, buddy, years.
Oh, I hope they make an appearance in some Star Trek someday, If we ever get another good one, that is.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Some good Star Trek.
Yeah. But, yeah, totally. When Jake's lying through his teeth at Wayun saying, like, yeah, there's a secret plot against the Dominion. We're coming to get you and all this stuff. And Nog's like, dude, what are you doing? Shut up. And, of course, Jeffrey Coombs as Wayun, I believe you. And Nog looks all panicked and he's like, no, I believe the first thing you said, that you're just trying to, you know, make your father happy, not that you're involved in some sort of plot.
Yep.
Yeah. Charming episode, hilarious episode. I would watch it if I wasn't doing a whole series rewatch. That's how much I like it.
Excellent. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
You know, it is a little bit of a silly episode. I suspect that this was sort of a filler episode, as in, like, mm-hmm. we've written 25 episodes for the season and we've committed to 26 episodes, so let's take the best of the leftover ideas and do it. But overall, it's a fun episode. It has some good laughs, some good intrigue, and as far as filler episodes go, this is actually a pretty good episode all around. So, yeah, I like it. I would definitely not recommend skipping it, and yeah, it was good.
Excellent. And Richard, your thoughts, sir?
I love this episode. I just love the concept of, you know, going around and finding the stuff and bartering with Dr. Geiger. Reminds me of the episodes where Nog went around and did favors for the staff and, you know, they took the captain's desk and just kind of gives me that feel. It's fun. It's lighthearted. That's the kind of thing that I can see going on in the middle of a war, you know, at the station, you know, doing something fun to cheer up Captain Sisko.
Mm-hmm.
And just, man, Dr. Geiger, you just get such a kick out of that guy. He's so weird, and he's got this conspiracy theory thing, and I want to know who the hell the soulless maidens of orthodoxy are. Like, who are these guys, and why are they so important?
Yep.
And, yeah, just, man, just a great episode. I don't know what else to say about it, but, yeah, it's a great episode.
Excellent. All right, so now we're at the season finale. This is episode 124 of the series, 26th of the season, and it's Call to Arms, Stardate 50975.2, directed by Alan Croker, written by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolf, original air date, June 16th, 1997. Faced with the realization that the Dominion are taking over the Alpha Quadrant, Sisko decides to mine the entrance to the wormhole with self-replicating cloned mines, thus beginning the Dominion War. This is... I know I say this a lot. This is one of my favorite episodes. And in my opinion, like, it wasn't a cliffhanger per se in that it says to be continued, but it is very much implied, like most Deep Space Nine series finales, season finales. But I think this is probably the most jaw-dropping, oh my, OMG, what is going to happen season finales that they ever did. You know, the Dominion, you know, I love, you know, the when Wayun shows up and him and Sisko have this friendly exchange, but they really got, you know, ulterior motives. They, you know, they've already made their decisions and they're just trying to fool one another into thinking the other one's not going to be, you know, turning against the other one. I love that. I loved, you know, the attack on the station, you know, like the season 4 premiere when we saw the Klingons attack. This time we see the Dominion attack the station, and it's just amazing. Definitely, you know, like they're successful with the minefield, but then when Sisko says, all Federation, you know, officers, you know, we're evacuating the station, that just blew my mind. I was like, what? Like, this isn't going to happen. And then it all kind of made sense. Okay, that's why he told Kira to tell the Bajorans to sign their non-aggression pact. And we find out in this episode that the Romulans have signed a non-aggression pact. So the Klingons and the Federation are really alone in a lot of ways, you know, as far as the big powers go, you know, in their war against the Dominion. You know, Rom comes up with this idea of the cloaked mines. You know, when they do evacuate, you know, like they have this big goodbye, and you know, and Sisko beams away, which was, you know, very sad, and you see them make a run for it, and then you realize, you know, Rom stays behind basically to be a spy for the Federation, and then you also find out that Jake Sisko stayed behind as well. So what's going to happen to Jake? You know, like, what are they going to do to Jake? And I just loved it. I loved that the bad guys won. You know, seeing Dukat and Weyoun and Damar, you know, strutting down the promenade, and then, you know, Major Kira, you know, telling them, you know, on behalf of the Bajoran government, I welcome you to Deep Space Nine. And Dukat says, you mean Tarak Nor, don't you? And then, you know, when, you know, the look of satisfaction on Dukat's face when he sits behind Sisko's desk, and then he sees the baseball. And then Weyoun asks him, what is that? And he says, it's a message from Captain Sisko. And Weyoun says, I don't understand. And Dukat says, Sisko's telling me he'll be back. And then you see the Defiant join a fleet of Federation and Klingon ships. It was, you know, like my jaw dropped. And then when we see the, you know, executive producer Ira Stephen Bear, you know, when it goes to black, I'm like, no. I just remember thinking, there's no way I can get through this. Like, to me, this season finale was right up there with, like, Best of Both Worlds Part 1. Like I remember, you know, seeing Picard, you know, when he was Locutus, and then Riker orders, you know, fire, and then it goes to black, and all you see is to be continued, and then you have to wait the whole summer. That's how I felt. I'm like, oh my God, like, what are they going to do? Like, it was a fantastic episode, well-paced, well-written, well-acted, and it set it up for season 6 in a way that we've never seen before in any other Star Trek show. Because, you know, spoilers, when we get into season 6, the first 6 episodes are basically back-to-back episodes. Like, they're continuations of an overall story that began with this episode. Something that, we've seen Deep Space Nine do a 3-part episode before, but we've never seen them do, like, a 6-part episode, 7-part if you consider this episode as part of it. At the time, like, this was, in my opinion, groundbreaking. All right, Richard, what are your thoughts, sir?
Honestly, probably, like you said, one of the best season-ending episodes in all of Star Trek. I really liked it. Sisko had like a security program to just wreck the station when they were leaving. I thought that was a good touch, you know. Fantastic episode. I really liked the baseball touch. That was really well done. And yeah, it was definitely part of the whole plan. He knew what was going to happen, and he had to make sure things were okay and make sure the Bajor is safe. I'm not sure what else to say about it besides the fact of, like, how great it was. And just the, you know, and the idea about sealing the wormhole with the mines and everything. It was just, yeah, it was pretty brilliant. And that's pretty much all I got to say.
Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Man, there is so much to unpack. You nailed pretty much all of it. Like Richard said, you know, the fact that they scuttled the station when they left, that's pretty standard operating procedure, as I understand it, based on the very small amount of military kind of novels that I've read in my life. If you had to leave, like, important tech behind, you would scuttle it, like, just destroy it so that your enemy can't then take it and then either use it against you or figure out how to make their own replicated kind of thing. So, yeah, that was a nice touch. A lot of the military tactics in the show seem, at least on the surface, like they were well researched. I can't speak to whether or not they were, but it's very convincingly done anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I really appreciate that aspect of it, because we're suspending disbelief enough as it is, quite frankly, for the sake of enjoying the show. But so it's nice to have a little bit of realism in there. But you're right, man, that cliffhanger. The first time that I rewatched the show as an adult, which was the first time I watched it since it was on the air,
mm-hmm.
This one just left me hanging. And I was so glad that Richard had the whole series on DVD sitting there just waiting for me to pop in the next disc, because there's no way. There's no way I could have waited a summer. There's not enough to do as it is in the summertime. I'd just be sitting there like, damn it! Just waiting all year.
It was rough, nothing, man. It was rough. Well, and it's funny, like, you know, especially like new viewers coming into Deep Space Nine, now they don't have to wait. Like, they could binge, you know, from episode one all the way to the last episode, and they can keep going. They don't know the struggles.
Well, that's what my girlfriend's doing right now. Katie's just able to binge it straight through, and she has been.
Yeah.
We do a couple episodes every night, and then, you know, sometimes if I'm at work, she'll blast through a whole season in a couple days. And, goddamn kids these days. I'll never know.
they'll never know the struggles. Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
And you guys can hear me now? There's no more trains going through?
Nope, no trains.
Sounds good.
I have no idea what happened there. As far as a season ender goes, this is just a hell of an ending. It left you craving more, especially in the pre-streaming age. It left you just dying to know what was going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's so many little moments, like the baseball left on the desk, that were just like, oh, yeah, he's coming back, you know? Yeah. Stellar episode. Don't have too much else to say that you guys haven't said already, except that I can't wait to start reviewing seasons six next.
And I will say one thing I loved is about those first six episodes of the, you know, not to give too much away going into season six. I loved having Dukat and them on Deep Space Nine. I loved the fact that the bad guys were running the station now. Like, it's such a cool idea. It's such a cool concept. And the fact that they're basically planning the war from Deep Space Nine for the enemy, you know, it's such an awesome twist, that they did. And I can't wait till we get to our season six episode, our first half of season six, because those next six episodes, I'm telling you, I loved them. All right. So before we go, I just want to ask you guys, you know, because we kind of mentioned New Trek. Are any of you watching the, what's that called? Star Trek Lower Decks?
Lower Decks.
No.
That's a negative, Big Honey.
Yeah.
I've got a few things to say about Lower Decks.
Okay, go right ahead, Richard.
So, as with most things, I like to watch it or see it and, you know, give sort of a more broad opinion. And from watching it, it's only gotten worse in the Star Trek world. I'm not sure why I keep doing this to myself, but I gotta know, because, I mean, Star mm-hmm. Trek is a big part of my life, and I can tell you that it's essentially an infantile show. It's unrealistic in the world of Star Trek, being that we know that Starfleet is a military.
Mm-hmm.
It's got poor writing. There's too many issues of, how do we say, like, forced ideology and such things.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Discovery, it's a great sci-fi kid show, but I don't think that they should have called it a Star Trek show. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Aside from some of the issues I have with it, it'd be a fun kid show, you know? Science fiction on a ship in space, having fun, having a good time, but it's definitely not what we know about Star Trek. And in a lot of ways, Star Trek is a serious show. It's mm-hmm. I mean, Starfleet's a serious thing. Federation is serious stuff. This show flies in the face of all of that and basically tries to make a mockery out of all of it, in my opinion. Yeah. And I I couldn't get through more than the first couple episodes, and it was just too much. So I have to rate that show as a 2 out of 10 at best.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking a bullet for us, because, yeah, like, I can't bring myself to watch it. Like, after Picard, I feel burnt, you know, and it's, you know, and even though it is animated, you know, I wish they would take it serious. You know, like, I mean, Star Trek, the animated series, you know.
It was a serious show. Like, yeah. It was a little bit grandiose.
Yeah.
But it was serious.
Yeah, and they took it serious. And they, you know, aside from Walter Koenig, they brought back all the original actors.
Most of them.
Yeah, to do voice work. You know, I would love for them to do a show, you know, like I don't know, like I said before, I would love for them to do a Captain Sulu show. You know, I know, like, animated series, because I know, like, you know, Walt, or George Takei, for years was, you know, especially during the 90s, he was, you know, pushing Paramount, like, come on, give me my own show, you know, like, people, you know, and there was a hunger for it, and I wish, like, now he's older, obviously, and he wouldn't be able to physically, well, he would still be able to physically do it, I'm sure he would, but realistically, in Starfleet, at, you know, at his age, he wouldn't be commanding the Excelsior anymore. So doing a live action show wouldn't really work, but I mean, they could do an animated series with Captain Sulu and the Excelsior, you know, and they could, you know, bring in, you know, Walter Koenig, you know, guest stars as Chekhov, or maybe even, you know, after the Enterprise was decommissioned, maybe Chekhov, you know, took a post on the Excelsior. Like, who knows? Like, you know, there's a lot of things they could have done or could do.
Or even the Captain Worf show would be awesome.
Oh, yeah. Man.
And oh, man. On top of that, Star Trek Titan is already a really good book series.
Mm-hmm.
They could turn that into a great show. Like, they could have made a Star Trek Titan cartoon or like animated series, and that would have been awesome, because Riker, he still can voice act with the best of them. Deanna, they could have their kids there. I mean, Kestra, all of the whole that. Riker looks a little bit old as well to be a captain, probably in the later years nearing Admiralty as far as physical looks, but they already have basically the guideline for a whole show. Mm-hmm. In a book series that's done well.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, they don't need to do what they're doing when they already have hundreds and hundreds of really good material that they can draw from.
Well,
and they give us this.
Yeah, from what I see, like, and from what I understand, one of the producers of Lower Decks actually worked on Rick and Morty. From what I understand, like, basically they're trying to do Rick and Morty, but in Star Trek. And don't get me wrong, I love Rick and Morty. Like, I like it as a TV show, but I don't want Rick and Morty in my Star Trek. No. You know, I want it to be separate. You know, like, a Rick and Morty, I can have a laugh. I can, you know, to me, that'd be like them making, like, and I know they had the TNG crew guest appear on Family Guy, you know, like 10 years ago or whatever. But it would be like them doing a TNG cartoon, but in the style of Family Guy. You know what I mean? Like, it just, it wouldn't work. It would be stupid. You know, suddenly, like, I think non-TNG fans may gravitate towards it, might like it, but fans wouldn't like it. Like, the already dedicated fan base. And for them to do Star Trek Lower Decks in the style of Rick and Morty, just, you know, that's not appealing to me at all.
Yeah. Honestly, for me, after watching Picard and Discovery, but also especially Picard, I just went, you know what? I'm done with New Trek. I'm not going to watch any more of these. I'm going to watch The Orville when the new third season comes out, because I'm a huge fan of that show. And that's basically it for Star Trek, other than what's already been made, because all this new stuff is just garbage.
Yeah, and not just the Kurtzman stuff, like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies, I think, are garbage too.
Yeah, they were pushing it. They were pushing it hard.
That's kind of where it started, though. Mm-hmm. I remember watching an interview, and the creators wanted to create an homage to George Takei, making the character Sulu gay, but Takei was against that because Sulu's not gay. He had a wife and a daughter. Mm-hmm. You know, he was against that, and they put it anyways just to have it there. Like, it doesn't, you know, like, you can have gay characters and you can have lesbian characters, whatever characters you want.
Yep.
But some other characters, why would you change it just to fit that particular narrative, right? I just, call me whatever you want, but even George Takei said he didn't want it.
You know, exactly.
I'm going to stand by that.
Yeah, well, like he said, like, that's not the character that Gene Roddenberry created. You know? And you know, it's weird that they would make that change for Sulu based on the original actor. You know, and like you said, like George Takei said, no, don't do it, because that's not who Sulu is. Like tonight, like sometimes when I've got nothing else to watch on TV, I'll put some YouTube videos on and I'll watch scenes and so on from Star Trek, right? So tonight, I was sitting there when we were having supper, sitting in the living room, and I was watching Star Trek, a scene from Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. And it's the scene where Kirk and the crew set the ship to blow up, and then they switch out with the Klingons. They go to the planet, the Klingons come on the ship, the Klingons go to the bridge, and, you know, that whole, you know, you know, the ship must be run by computer because it's the only thing speaking. And then Krug says, speaking, let me hear. And then you hear it count down. And then he realizes what's happening and tells them to get out of there, but it's too late. But at the end of that scene, when Kirk and all them are standing on the Genesis planet and they're looking up to the sky and they see what's left of the Enterprise shooting across the sky, and Kirk says, my God, Bones, what have I done? And then McCoy says to him, what you had to do, what you always do, turn death into a fighting chance to live. Like that, like the acting between those two, the expression on Kirk's face, like, you know, it was like he killed his child, right? That was powerful. That was very powerful stuff. You don't get that in the Jar Jar Abrams movies. You don't. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, it, you know, it's all flash, bang, you know, let's, you know, don't think too hard about this. Because if you actually think about the plot, it doesn't make sense. You know, whereas back, you know, Star Trek III, I mean, that was powerful. That was powerful acting. That was powerful writing. It was well written, well directed. And unfortunately, we just don't get that anymore. You know, and I want that back. Star Trek could be great again if it was handled by the right people, unfortunately. But anyway.
Well, I've heard rumors from Doomcock that Kurtzman Trek is coming to an end. Now, of course, that is unsubstantiated. It's just a rumor.
Please, God. But
let's hope so.
Yeah.
I don't know what you pray to or if you do, but if you haven't before, that was a good time. Just pick something.
Yep.
We don't pray, we beseech.
Good. Beseech whatever it is.
Let's get it done. I just, fingers crossed, I'm just still hoping we're going to see season 3 of Orville. Because even though, you know, it's got some Seth MacFarlane humor to me it's more Star Trek than anything that they're putting out by CBS.
Oh, absolutely it is. You know, it's just Star Trek it's Star Trek The Next Generation with a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Is what the Orville is.
Yeah. But anywho, I think we could call this an episode. But before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Curtis, can I find you anywhere on the internet?
Yes. Geez, I don't remember my Instagram name, but I did create an Instagram. There's nothing on it yet. Once there is, I'll be happy to update everyone with what the heck it's called once I remember.
Excellent. Richard, where can we find you, sir?
You can find me at Instagram and YouTube, Monk Lifts. Not a whole lot going on. might be coming back. I'm still trying to figure some stuff out. But just gonna rep Ragnar some more with RagnarTheTrader.com and get yourself a drinking horn for the holiday season. And yes. Get some cool stuff for Halloween.
Yes, I was going to say that. The holidays are upon us. We got Halloween. We got Christmas coming up. We got New Year's. Drinking horns are good for New Year's Eve. So, Ragnar, where can people go to find you, sir?
Well, if you go on my website, RagnarTheTrader.com, there's a tab called Meet Ragnar. Click on that. It'll tell you all of the upcoming shows I have. They're all in Alberta because Alberta is doing capacity limits different. Their capacity limits are based on providing social distancing, and there's no actual number, like no actual cap on how many people can go to an event. So I only have trade shows in Alberta, and they're all very small shows with all sorts of restrictions, but I do have 7 different trade shows between now and Christmas that I will be at. Of course, you can also go to RagnarTheTrader.com, and on Etsy, I'm Ragnar the Trader as well. So, yeah, I'm around.
Excellent, excellent. You can check out my blog. It's at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. I am on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at ChrisLock1701. The Pop Culture Pub and Podcast has a Facebook group on Facebook, so be sure to check that out. Send a request, and I'm sure I'll grant it if you want to join. So for the podcast, our next episode of the Pop Culture Pub is we're going to be the topic is thank you for being a friend. And we're talking about the best friendships in pop culture. And one friendship I will be bringing up is Chief O'Brien and Dr. Bashir, because I love their friendship. Also, thank you for being a friend. It's because I've been watching the Golden Girls a lot recently, because they just came to Amazon Prime Canada, and I wanted to use that song for the podcast. So thank you for being a friend. That's going to be our next episode. All right, so on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, Richard Szabo, Curtis Halamy, and Ragnar the Trader, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to us talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. This was our season 5.5 episode, and we will see you again for season 6.0.